Last Sunday night, we talked about Thomas and how Thomas has a reputation because the name Doubting Thomas has stuck with him, and we forever seem to have attached that label to him from the account that we see in John chapter 20. But what we noted last week is that Thomas was really not a whole lot different than the other followers of Christ that doubted him at different times as well. And we don't refer to Peter as forsaking Peter because he forsook Christ, and we don't remember Paul in the same way as being the persecuting and blaspheming Paul. But Thomas is one that name has stuck. And so feel a little bit sorry for Thomas for ever being branded in this way. So if you think about it, would you, if I were to ask you to list some of the most loyal and most courageous servants in the Bible, Thomas is probably not going to come up on your list. He's not going to be one that you would think of, despite the fact that he probably didn't behave a whole lot differently than the rest of the apostles, but it's been labeled as the doubter. So how many of us would like to be remembered for our worst moments? Have you ever gone to a funeral and heard the person that is delivering the message at the funeral give a long list of failures and missteps that the person that passed away had done? That would be a very odd funeral indeed. In fact, most of the time you hear a very whitewashed lesson if you hear something on either side of the equation there. You hear the good things, the good examples, and people would certainly want to remember their loved ones in that way, and you would want to be remembered in that way as well. And so what I would like to do tonight is make you aware that Thomas actually did have some good moments, and one that is recorded for us in Scripture in John chapter 11. In John chapter 11, we see that Jesus was going back to Judea, and he was going there for a purpose, and that was to raise Lazarus from the dead. But the apostles were not they were not really wanting this to happen. They were afraid of him going back. Let's read in John chapter 11, starting in verse 1. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters came to him, saying, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "The illness does not lead to death, for it is the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, and when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." And the disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you are going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, and he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world, but if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him." After saying these things, he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover." Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus has died, and for your sake I am glad that I was not there, that you may believe, but let us go to him." So Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us go also that we may die with him." And so what you see here is that Thomas is the one that speaks up. The other disciples are afraid to go to Judea. They're afraid that those that are wanting to kill Jesus are going to be successful. And the apostles didn't want to do that. And so they've reminded Jesus, "Hey, last time you were in Judea, the Jews tried to stone you. Why would you want to go back?" And so this time it it wasn't Peter that stood up and showed courage that they should go. Rather, it's Thomas here that let us go also that we may die with him. And Thomas did not say, let us go, and if he dies, we might also die with him. He's saying, you know, we're expecting to die. He expected Jesus to die if he went to Judea. He said, let's go and die with him. And so he stood up. He faced death and encouraged the others to have that courage as well. Isn't that interesting that here's this great moment in Thomas's life, yet we tend to remember him for what he did when he doubted. And so let's try to learn from this. Let's look at this and see what we can learn from this moment of courage in Thomas's life. First of all, we can see that, hold on just one second. I see a mistake on my slides here. All of my points were going to show up at the same time. We can't have you knowing what the points are going to be. We've got to have some suspense. So first of all, we must be committed to Christ, even if it means death. And so in John chapter 10, we see that the Judeans tried to stone Jesus. And at that time, you know, Jesus left the region. But here, because of Lazarus' death, Jesus wants to return. Well, you know, if somebody tried to stone me in some place, I may not want to go back there. And so the disciples are very aware of this. I mean, this just happened in the previous chapter. So Jesus is eager to return. He sees this as an opportunity to show his deity because he knows that Lazarus is not, you know, quote, sleeping. He knows that Lazarus has died, and he tells the disciples that, and he's going to go there and he's going to heal Lazarus because of his relationship with Mary and Martha. So Jesus wants to return to Judea. He's eager to do that. The apostles are frightened and try to talk Jesus out of this plan to return. But he's determined to do that. Thomas, we see, is the one who stepped out to lead and tell the other apostles, we need to be ready to face death with Jesus. In fact, Jesus says in a couple of chapters later, in John chapter 15, one of the most quoted scriptures of Christ, greater love has no man than someone lay down his life for his friends. And Thomas demonstrated this in the way that he spoke about Jesus and what he was willing to do. And so we need to examine ourselves. Do we have that kind of commitment? Revelation chapter 2, verse 10 tells us that we need to be faithful unto death. And, you know, that doesn't mean just faithful until the day that you happen to die. It means faithful even if that faithfulness leads to death. And that's the kind of faith that Thomas had. And many times people really were not called on to prove that. Everybody that is here probably has never been put at gunpoint and told to curse God or die. But Thomas was willing to go back to a place where they had a bad experience before and it was expecting that same type of treatment when they went back. So Thomas was willing to die for Christ. And you know what we see in the life of disciples is that their discipleship meant sacrifice. In Mark chapter 10 and verse 28, it tells us that the disciples all had made a similar sacrifice. In Mark chapter 10, verse 28, it says, Peter said to him, see, we have left everything and followed you. And Jesus said, truly I say to you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or mother and father or children or lands for my sake and for the gospel who will not receive 100-fold now in this time houses and brothers and sisters and children and lands with persecutions in the age to come, eternal life. And so Peter had made mention that all of them had made sacrifices to follow him, and Thomas certainly was among those. And many are not willing to sacrifice, not willing to sacrifice material things, like the rich young ruler was not willing. And so if we're not willing to sacrifice pleasures and sacrifice time, sacrifice material things, sacrifice other pursuits, then will we really be willing to sacrifice our life? Probably not. But if we've truly committed our life to Christ, it would be a small thing to do that. And it just begs the question of how committed are you really? One thing that we can learn about Thomas is even those who have made mistakes, even those who have sinned, can be great servants of God. And that's a great thing, since we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, and yet we can still be servants of God. And I think it is very interesting when we look at this act in Thomas's life. I think it's very encouraging, and it's very commendable that in the face of what he saw as death that could happen to them if they returned to Judea, he said, "Let's go. You know, I'm willing to go and die with Christ." It's an act of sacrifice. It's an act of commitment above and beyond what most people would be willing to do, because we see the others that are apprehensive about this. And so this, when we compare this to the Thomas that we usually think about, it's really not the same, is it? Yet we usually refer to him as Doubting Thomas. And so Thomas, later on, as was read earlier for us in the service, John chapter 20, we see Thomas refused to believe the reports of Jesus' resurrection, but yet here, a few chapters earlier, we see this act of great service that's demonstrated. So, some might say, well, we see a great Thomas here in this chapter, but, you know, by chapter 20, you know, he's digressed, and he's fallen, and I really don't subscribe to that. Thomas was a great servant even after, you know, John 20. He was with the apostles in the upper room in Acts chapter 1. We see that he was with the apostles on the day of Pentecost. And we see in Acts chapter 5 and verse 18, when the apostles were cast into prison, he is among that group as well. And he is with the apostles in Jerusalem in Acts chapter 8 at a time of great persecution. And so what we see is we see Thomas living a life of service to God. Even after he made his mistake there, when he had his doubt about Jesus being resurrected. And it certainly was a great occasion to see Jesus resurrected from the dead, and you can understand why that would be something hard to believe. But I want us to be encouraged by seeing that one thing that happened in Thomas's life didn't define his life. Too many times Christians look at the sins they've committed and the weaknesses that they have experienced, and they think that they can never do anything to serve God. It's a good thing that Thomas didn't feel that way, and Peter as well, because Peter also had his failures around the same time when he denied Christ, just as Christ had predicted. So we need to put those things aside. And no matter what sins we have committed, no matter what weaknesses we've faced or will face, we need to realize that we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us, just as Paul says in Philippians chapter 3, 13 and 14. And last week, you may have remembered the point that I made about Thomas, and I said even at his worst, he wasn't there were others that were equally bad. And so I didn't say that for us to compare ourselves to others and say, well, I'm bad, but everybody else is bad too. But we can turn that point around here and say that even at Thomas's best, he's not better than anyone else either. And so we saw Thomas at his worst in the previous lesson, noted that he was not worse than anyone else, and was not second rate. But the attitude that can also be crippling to an individual is an attitude of arrogance. Well, you know, Thomas could have said, you know, I'm the only one that stood up. I'm the only one that suggested that I would go die with Christ. You know, what's the wrong with the rest of these guys? And so he had times of great service, but that didn't mean that he was better than the others. He had weaknesses. He had misunderstandings. He failed. And so he's just like everyone else. He's saved by the grace of God. And grace means that he's getting something that he doesn't deserve, just as we do. So if you were Thomas, it might be, you know, one of those things that I want to keep going back and reading John chapter 11 where I said that great thing. And, you know, sometimes people do that, don't they? They look back at their glory days and they want to remember that one game where they caught the touchdown, or they did something great at some time in their life. They want to remember that one event. And, you know, that's a temptation that sometimes people have. But Thomas is one that, you know, he had some mistakes and he had some great things. And I'm sure that it was a humbling experience for him when he was told by Christ to put your hand in my hand and feel the scars. And then Jesus said, you've done well because you've seen me and you believe, but blessed are those who haven't seen and still believe. That probably hurt. But he could dwell on that, or he could choose to dwell on, you know, John chapter 11, where he said the right thing at the right time. The point is, no matter what things that we've done, we're still unprofitable servants. And we're not better than anyone else. And Paul dealt with that attitude in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 20 through 22, where he gives some instruction on this. 1 Corinthians 12, 20 through 22. There are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, all the parts that seem to be weaker are indispensable. Paul follows that teaching up in chapter 12 and chapter 13 with his teaching on love, saying that love doesn't boast and love is not arrogant, and that we must not think more highly of ourselves than we should. Galatians chapter 6 tells us that if we think we're something when we are nothing, that we deceive ourselves. And so, because Thomas did something that really is encouraging here, he doesn't need to dwell on that and try to, you know, live on that accomplishment. But one thing that's also interesting here in John chapter 11 is you see that the apostles are afraid to return to Judea with Jesus. And it almost looks like Jesus is going to be making this trip without him. And you know, they can't believe that he's going to do this. And so, you know, Thomas steps out here, making himself vulnerable to their criticism to get them going and headed in the right direction. And so every group needs leaders. And sometimes people can just be paralyzed and do nothing. One of the phrases that gets repeated a lot in my work is paralysis by analysis, that you analyze something so much and plan something so much that you never, you know, really ever get anything done. I've also heard it referred to as you spend way too much time in the huddle and not actually, you know, do the play. But Thomas here is not afraid, and the others are, but Thomas is expecting, you know, something bad to happen. He said, I'm going to go die with him. Let's go. We all really need to go with Jesus. Jesus is already moving, and Thomas is following and wants the other apostles to have some backbone. And so you notice he didn't get behind them and push them. He said, I'm going. And so that's what leadership does. It sets a pattern, it blazes the trail, it encourages others to join in. And so in Romans chapter 12 and verse 8, Paul tells us that leadership takes some zeal. And certainly we see that here. Romans chapter 12 and verse 8, looking at the gifts that people have, the one who exhorts in his exhortation, the one who contributes in generosity, the one who leads with zeal, the one who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness. And so you see an example here of one that's leading with zeal. And it's that's a connotation of haste. And that's what zeal means. And this leadership is something that was very, very needful. It takes work, and that's why sometimes people shy away from it. But what I admire here about Thomas is that he was gonna go with Jesus, and he's encouraging the others to do that as well. And so what he did is what was necessary, and it gives you a little bit different picture, doesn't it, of who Thomas was. We think about him as the one who doubted, and maybe for some other things, but we see him here in a different light, that he was a great servant. Yes, he made some mistakes, and you might even say that his unbelief was a great sin here, and he doubted a lot of people that he should have trusted in, when you see how many were telling him that Jesus lived, and he just wasn't buying any of that. So yeah, he doubted very profoundly, you could say, but he's still a great servant of God. And so no matter what missteps you make, or what great things you may have done on the other hand, if you come to Jesus as Thomas ultimately did, submitting to Jesus as Lord and God, and that's what Thomas said when he saw the scars, my Lord and my God, he lived a life of being a servant, and being a servant that was willing to die for Christ. And that is very admirable, and I hope that we can, when we think about Thomas, that we'll think about not only the big story that we all seem to latch on to, but also this other big story where we see Thomas was the one that would, when everybody else was afraid to go back to Judea with Jesus, he was not afraid to go. He was willing to go and die with Christ. And so let's remember those things. Let's use these examples of imperfect people, imperfect men that we see in the Scriptures to help us to be encouraged when we are imperfect, because we will be. But we need to live a life of faithfulness. We need to grow. We need to change. And that's what Thomas did. We can see that in the latter years of his ministry after his event of doubting. He still stayed engaged with Christ. He stayed engaged with the other apostles and lived a life of service. That's what we need to do. So I hope this will help you. And if we can help you in any way, we'd invite you to come while we stand together and sing.
Oh, dear, now is this.